Your mother ate my dog.
I'm Justin Souther.
Oh, you're Justin Souther. Okay.
We're both Mountain Express film critics.
Yes, we are.
From the Mountain Express, which
from
is
the
redundant.
Mountain Express, yes. Mountain Express film critics from the Mountain Express, yes.
We're also elitist bastards.
That's true.
And it just so happens we've been to the movies.
Oh, I have been to so many movies, it feels like.
I just went to one.
I know.
I don't know why you didn't ask me to do more, but I wasn't going to push my luck.
I thought I did.
And you said that we're just going to pretend it wasn't there.
Yeah, well, there you
go. So that doesn't count. Mm. It didn't ease your workload any.
It didn't ease my workload any. I had five reviews, five full-size reviews this week.
Full-size.
Full-size. It was hell. The funny thing is that four of them were okay.
And why are you complaining?
Two of them were even really good. And one of them I had to see out of curiosity anyway. That's probably why.
Because you like to complain.
Well, yeah.
Woe is Kim. It's going to be
That's
the new
right.
name of
Do
this
Do we
podcast.
Need to tell any people
Kim's where... just going to complain about all these good movies
oh, good
he watched.
Heaven.
Well,
you never
Rio.
Complain. He never complains.
This is me complaining. I'm passive aggressive. What did you watch, Kim?
Oh.
Do you want to start with your...
Land of goodness me, what did I see? What did I not see?
Let's start with Atlas Shrugged, because I feel like that's a good one to
Atlas Smug, yes,
with.
Okay.
Part one. We should point out.
Part one,
there's
yes, it's part
be...
one. That, however, is not actually indicated until you get to the end of it.
Okay.
With the world's cheesiest, stupid, bombastic, piece of crap, agitprop ending I have ever encountered. I had a hard time not laughing.
I'm disappointed you didn't. But what did you really think
I
of
was
the movie,
afraid
Ken?
I was afraid they would harm me. This, you know, it was probably... This
that
audience,
was the one crowd of people you could probably outrun.
That's probably true, because for some reason, I was one of the youngest people in that auditorium.
I know. You're spry.
I'm damn spry, comparatively speaking. And I know the theater. I could have ducked in someplace.
Exactly. I would have liked to see that. We should film that.
We should.
Running away from a gang of elderly tea partiers. How's that for a horror movie?
What did I think of the movie? Okay, first off, let me say that I don't like Ayn Rand, and I find this so-called philosophy of hers to be morally reprehensible.
Right.
At the same time, she and her book both deserve something better than this piece of shit movie.
Okay.
It's cheap. It's stupid. It is poorly written. It's almost not acted at all. But it's acted by people who think this stuff is really serious that they're saying. What is it with all this altruism? Oh, God.
I ask myself that all the time.
Yeah, this company went broke because they had to pay people what they needed, not what they were worth. What? Anyway, it's bad. It's really bad. It's really, really bad. And although it did well on opening weekend, it consistently went down. It went down on Saturday. It took a huge drop on Sunday. Which to me says, all the people who really wanted to see this were there on Friday. And I don't expect it's going to have anything like legs. So.
I haven't seen it, I don't.
We shall see. But, I mean, what is there to say about it? It's bad. I mean, it's really, it's bad, it's simple-minded. It, you know, of course, the philosophy is simple-minded, too, because it works on this idea that if you take away the movers and shakers, my God, the world will just go to shit. Well, no, a bunch of people that previously had never gotten a chance are going to step in and take over is what's going to happen. We've seen it happen in the arts before. We saw it happen at the coming of sound, and we saw it happen when the rating system came in. All of a sudden, people who would never have been looked at to do things got to do things, and guess what? In many cases, they were better than the people they were replacing. So, you know, this is just nonsense. In the movie, which differs somewhat from the book, because they have to excuse the fact that everybody's all hot for building railroads, which, you know, just isn't true. They also have to ignore the fact that, gee, high-speed rail exists in other places. It's like, never heard of this in this movie. Well, it also, you have to understand that apparently Obama gets reelected in 2012 because by 2016 the world is really in bad shape. I mean,
you're saying Donald Trump wouldn't?
No. Donald Trump, I'm sure, would have saved us with his hair. But
whatever's under it.
Whatever's under that hair, yes. It's where the dye has leached into his skull. Okay. Anyway. Nobody has a job. Gas is $37.50 a gallon. It's grim. All the great minds, which mostly what we see get spirited away, are bankers. I don't really think of them as being the great producers, but, you know, that's where we stand now. This is a very dystopian society on a very small budget that makes no sense whatsoever. You're going to tell me that you've got all these people out of work, not able to buy gas, and they're not going to be rioting over people driving limousines down the generally deserted street, or they're not going to attack Hank Reardon's palatial and apparently completely unguarded home that's burning enough wasted electricity for a small city. I mean, please, this is just stupid. So anyway, it's about building this damn railroad while this shadowy John Galt figure, played by the director, which is really giving this man a lot of credit he doesn't deserve by calling him a director, steps out of the shadows. Or actually, he doesn't even step out of the shadows. He does this kind of, psst, hey, buddy, out of the shadows of these people. We see this a couple times. He's dressed like McGruff the crime dog and doing a really bad Clint Eastwood voice.
I'm sure he's not a flasher.
Well, that's the whole thing. You know, he tells these people, you know, he's going to take them someplace where they'll be appreciated. If that's not a pickup line, I never heard one. And they all fall for it, too, apparently. And they build a railroad, and then one of their compatriots vanishes, leaving a note which is read badly over the end of the film, or the end of part one, and promise us two more movies. We'll see about that. That's it. I have nothing further to say about this. I am sure I'm going to get tired of responding to people online when the review comes out.
But you'll respond to every single one of them.
Not necessarily.
Rio is this animated movie about a domesticated parrot who never learned how to fly, voiced by Jesse Eisenberg, doing his best Jesse Eisenberg impression.
Well, it's pretty good when you can do an impression of yourself.
Doing, as we call it, the Eisenberg. He gets sent to Brazil to procreate with the last of his species, who's voiced by Anne Hathaway.
The last of his species is Anne Hathaway. Yes. I like that.
Voiced by. They both get kidnapped. They escape. They have to find whatever. I don't know. It's fine.
Like the idea that the last of Jesse Eisenberg's species is Anne Hathaway. Anyway, go ahead.
That's all I had to say about it.
Say something more. It has bad songs?
Well, I mean, everything about the movie's, like, I've forgotten most of it already. It's perfectly fine. It's basically a Saturday morning cartoon. Really nice. There's really bad songs in it. It's occasionally kind of annoying, but not so much that it's unwatchable, but it's just, who cares? Like, yeah.
People
I'm
in
sure
Detroit.
It'll look good when Cars 2 comes out, but until then.
Well, so I saw that Jemaine Clement had a song in there.
Yeah, and it's really bad. It's stupid. It's him rapping.
Who?
The guy from Flight of the Conchords is the bad guy in the movie. He has a song where he raps. Except it's that really bad, like, jokey white person rap. So, like,
and, you know,
it's something
not,
that should
not,
have been
I'm
done away with in the early 90s, but yet
process.
Still seems to, like, float around sometimes. It's not good. It's not funny. There's nothing
it's
funny
it's
in the movie.
Vanilla Ice trying to be McHammer?
No, it's wider than that. This is not good.
Wider than Vanilla Ice.
But, I mean, the movie itself isn't horrible. It's just completely superfluous and there's no point to it.
Unnecessary.
Yes.
Unnecessary.
But I sat through
cinema.
It, so.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah. There's your next screening room.
Unnecessary cinema. Well, you could make a case.
The
100
most
cinema.
Unnecessary movies.
Whoa. No, that's too long.
Okay.
Not this weekend.
You think up 5 unnecessary
totally
movies.
Totally frivolous, unnecessary movies.
This is one of them. I don't know if it's in the top 5, but
it's
it goes in that
okay.
category of who cares? Like, if Rango was still around, I'd say just go watch Rango. And
it's still the Bowcatcher.
Okay, go to the Bowcatcher and see Rango.
In fact, they did pretty well with it this past weekend.
Well, good.
Good, exactly.
But, I mean, Hop has done well. It isn't.
No, Hop is crap.
Yeah, I know.
In fact, so, it's probably worse than Rio.
No, I'm positive it is, but Rio, who cares?
The macaws don't crap jelly beans, do they?
I'm trying to remember if there is bird poop in this movie, and I feel like maybe there is at some point, but I've forgotten.
Okay.
I think there's at least reference to bird poop.
You could be, you know, really tasteful like they did on the BBC and call it bird lime.
Well, we're not on the BBC.
Yeah, I know. They wouldn't have us
classy.
On a dare. You have to wear a dinner suit. And, you know, even on radio.
We'll save that for our
on radio, I'm sure these people were wearing dinner suits.
What did you watch, Ken?
Certified Copy is a really interesting, really pleasant film from Abbas Kiarostami, who is an Iranian filmmaker working in a mix of Italian, English, and French. I'm sure it was an interesting experience. I think he probably was just enjoying the hell out of the fact that he could show people, oh, I don't know, kissing and having cleavage and, you know, things like that. It's about an author on a book tour who accepts an invitation from a French woman there in Tuscany. She appears to run an antique store in Tuscany, but almost everything in this film, it's never really specified. In fact, she, played by Julia Binoche, has no name. He has a name because he has a book. But almost all the other characters have no names whatsoever. And she invites him for a tour of Tuscany, as she knows it. And since he is a Brit out of his element, he goes with her. And except that the whole thing is kind of strangely offhand. It seems okay for a while. They have some mild argument going on, mostly about the nature of art and the nature of whether a copy is as good as the original. And then it gets really, they start having this increasing tension between them, especially when she takes him to see this piece of art that was revered as a certified antique from Greece for a couple hundred years till they found out it's a copy. But they liked it. They liked it so much that they still keep it revered, only in a different way. And since he seems to be unimpressed with this, even though it's basically the subject of the art book that he's written, she gets really pissy. And he takes her for coffee. And he gets a phone call while they're in there, and he goes out to deal with this, whereupon the woman running the coffee shop mistakes him for her husband. And Juliette Binoche plays along. And the further the film goes, the question keeps arising whether these people maybe aren't really married, and this whole thing is like some sort of weird fantasy thing they do. And the film is never going to really answer you, which may, you know, not sit well with a lot of people. It's brilliantly acted. Juliette Binoche is Juliette Binoche, and this Walter Schimmel person, who is a, I guess his name, a Brit opera singer. This is his first dramatic role, and he's a natural. He's definitely has what it takes to be a screen actor. For an opera singer, he is amazingly subtle. So, I mean, I would really recommend it, and if you're in Asheville, I would recommend seeing it this week, because I don't see it being here for a third week.
You want to ask him about Scream 4?
Okay. No. He's not very helpful.
Mm. I have no interest in Scream 4.
I bet you haven't.
Ken, why don't you tell us about Scream 4?
Oh, sure. I know that you're just dying to hear about Scream 4.
I am.
Well, I thought so. Scream 4.
See, my pulse is racing.
Is that what that is? I'm going to put an ointment
Blood's
on it.
Blood's boiling. Go to Scream 4.
Okay, well, Scream 4 is a sequel to Scream 3, which I've never seen.
Which is a sequel to Scream 2.
Which is a sequel to Scream.
Yes, which is a sequel to...
Nothing, exactly. Okay,
exactly.
Well. So, it's a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Uh-huh.
It's too long, but it's generally entertaining. It's very juicy. It's a lot of blood.
Uh-huh.
A lot of murders. The plot is kind of stupid because it's like, I cannot imagine why this community would be all happy that Neve Campbell is going to come back through on her book tour, because it's an established fact, wherever she goes, the ghost face killer kicks in and starts offing people. And he does himself proud in this thing. I mean, he offs a whole bunch of people. There's a mystery. The mystery's fairly well handled. It thinks that it's a satire on modern society, on social networking, especially Facebook, cell phones, text messaging. And all these things here are perfectly valid things to satirize and comment on, but the film, I don't know if it pulls itself up short on this or if it just doesn't really know how to do it. My suspicion is that they want to have their cake and eat it too, is that Craven and Kevin Williamson want to make fun of these people but realize that they are a large chunk of their audience and don't want to alienate them.
Well, at the same time, I'm sure if I go on the internet, there's going to be a Scream 4 Facebook page.
I'm sure there is, but it's probably
Twitter.
But it's probably not done by them.
No, but still.
It's
unavoidable.
It's fairly unavoidable, that's true. I mean, as satire, it's pretty reasonable, and it should have worked better than it does. But I didn't mind seeing it. I had a perfectly fine time with it, but I probably won't ever see it again.
Do you think there'll be Scream 5?
Theoretically, it's already been okayed, but this kind of did really underwhelming business. So, you know, it was beaten out by the last of Jesse Eisenberg's species. So, you know.
I'm still amazed Wes Craven's allowed to make movies.
Well, I would have thought that they might not be after the last one, which I didn't dislike. But nobody went to see it, and most people disliked it intensely. I thought it was okay.
Well, after
it was
that,
dumb.
And The Curse, and
Yeah, Red well, Eye. Curse is bad.
I think it's Red Eye.
Red Eye made money, yeah. It wasn't very good, but it made money. I'm sure I'm going to get... I'll probably hear about that because a lot of people think Red Eye is just dinky-do, and I don't. I'll just go ahead and say that, you know, Super is one of the best things I've seen all year. And this is coming from someone who generally does not like Rainn Wilson and who thought James Gunn's Slither was overrated. Entertaining, but overrated. So I was really surprised I liked this movie as much as I did. And I'm equally sure that there are people, oh yes, there are people, believe me, there are people who will hate this movie. And that's because, and without giving away too much, I'm going to say it takes a really dark turn. Win-win is a winner. There, I've had my Gene Shalit moment. Maybe even a Jeffrey Lyons moment. No, that's too grim to consider. It's a very good film. It's from Tom McCarthy, who made The Station Agent and The Visitor. And it's very similar in a lot of respects. Although I think it's probably better developed. I mean, all these films are about people who are making unlikely connections and becoming peculiar extended families. This one is a little bit more reasonable because it actually starts with a real family. And it's Paul Giamatti as a really, he's basically a nice guy lawyer who takes cases that don't pay well. And he's in financial straits. So when one of his clients ends up in a situation where he's going to be put in a home for senile dementia, Giamatti turns around and accepts guardianship of him, which pays $1,508 a month. But the man also has money, and so he's going to take this money, but he's going to take the $1,508, but since the man has enough money to do this, he is going to put the man in a nursing home, which is not what he wanted, and it's also not what they were expecting him to do. This, however, would be a really reasonable, workable thing if it weren't for the fact that the man's grandson shows up, who ends up being taken into Paul Giamatti's household, which actually turns out to be a plus because the kid is an Aces wrestler. And for some reason or other, Giamatti coaches a high school wrestling class for free. A really bad high school wrestling class. So, I mean, it then gets more complicated, and the question is, how can we resolve this? And, of course, we resolve it in a... it's essentially a comedy, so it's resolved nicely. But it didn't exactly resolve the way I thought it was going to be. I don't think it's a great picture, but it's really entertaining and likable. And sometimes that's as much as you can ask.
We have another Thursday horror picture show. You know how many we've had?
I know we've been going over a year now.
Yes. No, it will be a year.
A year when?
Thursday. Actually, well...
Faith and Begorra.
Well, technically Friday.
Well...
But for our purposes, Thursday is our...
They're showing Liz Taylor movies on Friday here, so that's scary enough. Wow, I say. We should have a party. Or get an award or a reward or something. But I don't see that happening. So, what are we showing this Thursday at 8 o'clock in
Dead
the
Alive.
Cinema Lounge at the Carolina?
Dead Alive.
By
Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson Splatterfest.
A.K.A. Brain Dead.
Yes, I think it's not called that because I believe there was a... I think that there's another film that had already been released in this country by that title. I'm not going to swear to that, but I kind of think there was.
Right.
And
we're assuming this one's better than that one, since we're not sure.
If it's the film that I think it is, it's better, but the other one is certainly worth seeing.
Okay. But we're not talking about that movie.
No, we're not going to talk about that movie. Instead, we're going to talk about Peter Jackson's ultra-splattery zombie picture, Brain Dead, which
right.
I believe still... Or Dead Alive, which what we're showing says Dead Alive on it, so we should call it that. In any case, it still holds the record, so far as I know, for being the goriest movie ever made. And having kind of run it last night, off to the side, I'd have to say it's almost certainly true. This is one juicy picture. It's mostly done in a fairly funny fashion, so it comes under the heading of splatstick. It also, however, if you are of a mind to, does lend itself to a deep, meaningful reading, which I really don't suggest you do. It's very Oedipal. But I would leave it alone. I would just take it for the splat and go from there.
Have you seen it?
Of course I have.
Well, that's great.
What are the stupid question, Steve.
What are your thoughts on Dead Alive?
Exactly the same thing. It's gory and it's fun. And
better than all three Lord of the Rings films put together.
That's true.
And the Ashford Film Society showing is also at 8 o'clock. That's next Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
And it is, amazingly, also in the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina.
How convenient.
It's very convenient, especially for us.
You don't have to go anywhere.
That's right. You know, if they would allow me to move in here, I would save a lot of trouble. It's Roman Polanski's Chinatown, about which I would have thought nothing needs to be said, but A, one of the reasons that I thought we should show it was all these people that I talked to about Rango who had no idea where the plot for it came from. Oh, I've never seen Chinatown. I thought, well, we should change this. You know, let's give people a chance to see Chinatown. Well, we've already gotten one letter about how this is an epic fail for the Asheville Film Society showing a film by this criminal Roman Polanski.
Never mind, we're showing two Polanski films next week.
He missed that one because it's not famous.
Yeah.
Never mind that. What was Ghost Rider on my list last year? Number two?
It was on mine as well.
Yeah. You know, I mean, this comes under the heading of this has nothing to do with the movie. So, you know, there's a lot of people that are going to burn in hell for liking this movie if this is indeed a basis on which to judge this film.
So, real quickly, give me a synopsis.
I'm not giving you a synopsis of Chinatown. That's ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous.
You should slap him.
I feel like it, yeah.
Can you edit in a slap sound?
That's better. That was the sound of me slapping Miami Steve.
It's not that complicated.
But I don't feel like I should tell anybody. I think people should know.
Can you say that it's a Jack Nicholson movie?
Well, it's Jack Nicholson, set in the 30s in Los Angeles.
Directed by a degenerate.
Directed by a degenerate. But you know what's really funny? It was before this man was labeled a degenerate. I mean, before any of this happened, I had friends who would watch a Roman Polanski film and turn around afterwards and go, "This man is no mere filmmaker. This man is sick." They were right. You know, whatever. Anyway, this is completely beside the point. He's a private eye. This is probably the first of the legitimate neo-noir films. And
Nicholson is a private eye, not
Nicholson,
Polanski.
Yes, not Polanski. Polanski plays a small-time hood in the film who cuts Jack Nicholson's nose in a very famous scene. He gets hired by a woman who is pretending to be the character that is really Faye Dunaway. And then Faye Dunaway starts to sue him and changes her mind and ends up hiring him when her husband shows up dead. And it's a very complicated, convoluted story about trying to buy up the water rights for Los Angeles, is what it really comes down to, which is all being masterminded by a lip-smackingly hammy John Huston, who I enjoy on screen much better than I enjoy when he's let loose to make a movie. So, anyway, if you haven't seen it, you should see it. If you have seen it, you should see it again. And I'm really hoping when I saw it in the theaters when it was new, there's this scene where they're at that retirement home that doesn't accept people of the Jewish persuasion, where Nicholson is about to be beaten up, and she's already gone to get the car, and she drives through real fast, and he rides off on the running board, and people would burst into applause back then. I'd like to see that happen again. You should start it up, you know.
That's not, doesn't count if I go like, hey,
yeah, it's
start.
Like a click. You're you a clack, you know. This is not hard to do. People
you
used to hire people for
things.
This.
Then hire me. Don't tell me.
I just suggested it.
I don't come cheap, Kim.
Not what I hear, but
this podcast notwithstanding.
All right, what is opening this week, other than Super?
I don't know. Medea's Big Happy Family.
No. Get it right. It's Tyler Perry's Medea's Big Happy Family.
Sorry.
It's torturous.
I don't care. You get to watch it. So.
I know. I'm the Once Tyler again. Perry expert. The completest. I've seen them all.
You should write a book on his films. You can make a ton. You can actually make money off a book.
I'm sure you probably could. Don't tempt me with this sort of thing. Something tells me that talking about Perry's mise-en-scene is not really what the readership would go for this, but maybe I'm wrong. We may be selling his core audience short here.
It's true.
Which is why they didn't go see For Colored Girls. Okay. Anyway, that's opening, and so is Jane Eyre.
Right.
Yes.
Which, have you seen a trailer for that? The
trailer looks pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
It looks much more interesting than a movie called Jane Eyre should,
right.
You know, the 22nd version of Jane Eyre,
right.
Which actually is about right. And then there is Water for Ethelmofluffs.
Starring your favorite.
Robert Pattinson in a torrid romance, torrid PG-13 romance, with Reese Witherspoon?
Or an elephant.
Well, that's unclear, and that there's some really dubious-looking shots from this film involving Reese Witherspoon fondling an elephant's trunk while she's talking to Robert Pattinson, which I can think can only lead to disappointment. But nonetheless, it's opening. And
do we ever find out if African
yes,
Cats?
Yes, African Cats is opening.
Okay.
Myself, I have no interest in seeing this. The only way I would see this movie is if at some point, as I've told you,
uh-huh.
narrator Samuel L. Jackson said, I've had it with the motherfucking cats on the motherfucking plane. And I don't think that's happening. Disney just doesn't appreciate that sort of thing, which is why they're Disney. And I guess that brings us to the end of another exciting podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We've rambled on incoherently for some considerable time now. And I guess we're still... I'm still Ken Hanke. And that's yawning Justin Souther.
Yes.
Who has obviously enjoyed the hell out of this broadcast. And we both work for the fine folks at the Fine Mountain Express, who make this fine podcast possible. In part by lending us the incredible talents of
Justin Souther.
Of Justin Souther.
Yes.
Yes. Let's misidentify the producer of the show. I mean, it's not like he wouldn't do it to us.
Right.
So
I kinda wish you'd said Ally Marshall though. I kinda wish that it happened.
Oh
well.
Oh, yeah, well, that's getting edited out. So in any
she
case...
She can guest produce us somehow.
In reality, because I will take the high moral road here, we are produced by the illustrious Miami Steve, the Colonel Schanefelt. And I still don't know
Esquire.
What either of those things mean. So there we are. Ah, I think before we leave, I think we should put forth the fact that we are coming up on our 1 year anniversary of doing these things.
What kinds of
and believe me, we're as tired of it as you are. And we're looking for ideas for our anniversary show. We are also accepting gratuities, presents, and floral tributes. So, just bear that in mind.
You're also assuming anyone listens this far in.
That's true. They probably don't.